The U.S. dollar has lost 85% of its value since the 70s, when the dollar decoupled from gold, and the government seems bent on continuing the tradition. Charlie Kirk here. From now until after the elections, the government can print as much money as they want. The last time they did that, inflation went up 9%. Gold is the only asset that has proven to withstand inflation. Invest in gold with Noble Gold Investments. You will get a 24-karat, 1/4 ounce gold standard coin for free. Just use promo code Kirk. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. That's noblegoldinvestments.com, the only gold company I trust. Hey, everybody. A fun, unscripted conversation with Jack Cashel about white flight, and then a conversation about what organization on the left is taking over America without us even realizing it. It's called America Votes. Very important conversation. Email me, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. We have a new way you could support the program. Don't worry, all you that support us at charliekirk.com/support. Don't worry, we have a migration plan for all of you. Legal migration, of course. But I wanted to say thank you for those of you that are joining in huge numbers. It's amazing. At members.charliekirk.com. It's a way for you to support our program. We believe it's affordable for all income levels. It's a way for you guys to get behind the work we are doing. Members.charliekirk.com. In fact, I want to mention and name some of the people that became members overnight. It's really exciting. Janet from California, thank you for becoming a member at members.charliekirk.com. Mary Lisa from Idaho, thank you. Janet from California, Scott from Utah, Linda from California, Dorothy from Maryland. There are levels for all types, by the way. You guys could check it out. $8 a month. Members.charliekirk.com. Maybe you're on a fixed income, but I bet you could squeeze $8 a month. And you might say, well, what do I get, Charlie? Well, we're doing exclusive Zoom calls. We're going to have a message board. We're developing all this stuff. And you get to hear the full conversation with the legend, Tucker Carlson. Here's a little tease. We talk about this sometimes. Your faith, has it strengthened? Have you grown closer, farther apart from God? Not just through this, but just in your 7 years from Fox, because you do talk more spiritually, especially in the last couple of years.
I probably shouldn't, because, I mean,
well, I love it.
You
personally
don't want to take spiritual advice from me.
Well, I'll be honest, Tucker, I don't take spiritual advice from Episcopalians.
Good. You shouldn't, trust me.
An Episcopalian tells me about the Bible, I say, stop.
Know. Well, but trust me, no Episcopalian's ever going to tell you about the Bible.
No, they'll tell you about their feelings.
Yeah,
or
no,
some
it's
social
totally
justice,
right.
Water
or they'll
works
lie
project
about it. And I was talking about this last night, actually. I've been, just for my own interest, reading the Bible since February. And
it's beautiful.
It's just so interesting. It's the most interesting thing I've ever read.
It's like, the whole civilization's based on
it. It's completely blowing my mind.
Become a member. Members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Welcome back, everybody. Email us freedom@charliekirk.com. I saw this story and I thought it was incredibly important on the epoch, or is it epic? It is the great debate. Is it epoch or epic? I'll say epoch times. One of the biggest organizations helping Democrats win elections. The election of state Supreme Court justices doesn't always appear to garner national attention. The article continues. Super interesting. Katie Spence is the author. She covers various topics, focusing mainly on energy and politics for the Epoch Times. And this is a really important article. Katie, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on. I'm happy to be here.
So, Katie, this is an incredibly important article. Walk us through your findings. What is this organization and what is the story here?
Right. So when I first started looking into America Votes, it was because I was looking at the Open Society and George Soros and what he has been doing with funding, and noticed this huge donation and wanted to find out, well, what do they do? And come to find out, they really are this organization that is the hub when it comes to voters. They go out, they engage in the community, and they try to get more people to vote early, especially people of color and the younger generations. And they are looking to advance progressive ideologies.
So what exactly is this organization called again? It is called the...
It is America Votes.
It's America Votes. So they, if you check out America Votes and you Google it, to an untrained eye, it doesn't look overly controversial. It says they're a hub of the coordination hub of the progressive community. I believe, are they a 501c3 or 501c4? I think it's 501c4. And you know who the founder is? Go ahead.
They are a 501c4.
The founder is Cecile Richards, the former head of Planned Parenthood. And their core states are obviously where we're getting our tails kicked. It is a massive, massive effort. And they talk about all of their partners. So who exactly is funding this organization?
They do not disclose who funds them. You have to find out who is funding them by going to other organizations like the 1630 Fund or the Open Society. So there is nothing on their site that says, here's where we're getting our money. Here are the donors that give us these grants or donations, unfortunately.
So America Votes had the largest ever midterm mobilization effort. And it was a key reason we did not see the red wave so many pundits had predicted. They say their partners knocked on more than 26 million doors and had nearly 5 million conversations, Ms. Dawson said. Quote, we followed that up with another $5.7 million doors knocked in Georgia ahead of the runoff. Just before the summit, we knocked on a more than 535,000 doors. Is there anybody on the right that is doing something similar to this?
I don't know if they're doing it quite to the same level. I have heard the RNC is planning on looking to get out and encourage early voting. I think it's called Walk Your Vote. What is it?
Bank Your Vote or something.
There is an effort. Yeah, there is an effort from the RNC because of what happened in the 2022 election and in 2020. So I think there is an effort to say, hey, we're going to let's get out there and do a little bit more organization. But it is not nearly to the level of America Vote.
Yeah. And so they technically say they are a 501c4 social welfare organization, which we run a social welfare organization, Turning Point Action as well. You know, we know about this. So but they're also very focused on early voting and a coordination hub. What I find to be really interesting is that they're able to get a lot of these alliance organizations, AFL-CIO, AFSCME, Alliance for Youth Action. I haven't even heard of some of these organizations. And they list them all right there. For example, the Alliance for Youth Action grows progressive people power across America by empowering local young people's organizations to strengthen our democracy, fix our economy, and correct injustices through on-the-ground organizing. You go through it, there's dozens of these organizations, Black Votes Matter Fund. I mean, I've even heard of all these groups. And so is America Votes the central hub, or do they just call themselves the central hub? Is it the closest thing to, quote unquote, the offensive coordinator of the Democrat offense?
So they call themselves the progressive hub. And what they're trying to do is reduce duplication efforts and to make it so there's more streamlined. They say that any time a voter is engaged more than once, that's a wasted effort. So they are the central hub.
I think what you're saying, they are a self-appointed progressive leader. Is that right?
So they are the progressive hub, like I was saying, and they want to reduce duplication efforts. They want to make sure that no one is going out twice to someone who may or may not vote. They want to go out one time only, and say, hey, get your ballot. So they work with like Planned Parenthood. They work with Black Votes Matter. They work with all sorts of organizations, and they give them grant funding to then go out more and disperse. So they are the organization hub, and they kind of coordinate everything.
And so, but they're not, what's interesting is they're big, but they're not huge. What I find interesting is according to their, they have a $30 million budget, $40 million, right? Is that correct? There's other organizations that have hundreds of millions of dollars, but their role seems to be they are the appointed on the ground non-duplication nonprofit. So was that a role given to them by Arabella Advisors or Democracy Alliance, or did they just kind of grew into it? For example, they grow Emily's List. I mean, they coordinate Emily's List. They coordinate all these different groups. You can go to their website and check it out. It's rather extraordinary. How did this happen? How long have they been in operation?
So they started in 2003, and Cecil Richards started with them in 2004. So she's not actually one of the original founders. She came on board after. But it started out just trying to get everything coordinated and streamlined. And I don't know if they were like designated as a coordination hub, or that's just what it became over time. It sounds like it more became that way over time. I don't know if you've read the blueprint, which talks about what happened to politics in Colorado, where Jared Polis and a group of billionaires came in and made everything streamlined because they didn't want to waste money. They didn't want to waste effort. So it seems like that is what happened with America Votes. They saw that there was duplicated efforts, and then they streamlined it, and that kind of put them in that position. I don't know if they were designated the coordination progressive hub.
Yeah, and so look, you know, at Turning Point Action, we're trying our best to create a similar hub, but most organizations on the right do not want to work together because they're afraid somebody will get the credit. That's not them. That's how the right works. The article is terrific. I encourage you guys to check it out in depth. One of the biggest organizations helping Democrats win elections. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let me tell you about a company I love that embodies the spirit of freedom and innovation, Christensen Arms. Christensen Arms makes its rifles right here in America. But it's not just about how they're made. The company is a true leader in firearm technology. Christensen Arms invented the carbon fiber barrel back in 1995. And today, their state-of-the-art barrels continue to provide unmatched accuracy for everyone out there exercising their Second Amendment rights. Their innovation doesn't stop at the barrel, though. Christensen also pioneered an ingenious new carbon manufacturing process called Flash Forge Technology, or FFT, to deliver the lightest and most durable rifle you'll ever own. As a Christensen Arms rifle owner myself, I could proudly say these rifles are heirloom quality, so you can pass down a lasting legacy of freedom and true American craftsmanship for generations to come. So, my fellow patriots, join me in supporting Christensen Arms. Visit ChristensenArms.com/Kirk or use promo code Kirk during checkout to get an exclusive 15% discount on apparel and accessories and to check out their incredible lineup of rifles. Christensen Arms, defining the future of firearms and keeping America strong. The last thing that Rush Limbaugh said at the Turning Point USA event, I think it was his last public speech before he passed away, was warning a group of kids about the green agenda. At the time, I laughed. I said, that's quite a topic, but he was so right and he did it intentionally. It was the first thing he said. What I'm saying is it was the main crux of his speech. Basically, he has 5,000 kids there and you don't know what he's going to say. Life advice, reject your commie professors. And he just says, comes out swinging. And by the way, climate change is the number one thing you have, not climate change, the reaction to climate change. He called it a hoax. The amount of censorship that is now happening, if you dare disagree or ask questions about the climate dogma, the climate earth-worshipping religion, is remarkable. If there's an issue that is just kind of creeping up, and it's not even in the back burner, it's just always kind of a third or fourth thing in the news cycle. Third or fourth thing in the news cycle. Lawsuits here and fossil fuel abolition there. A tyrant's fantasy is to have a massive green economy transition. You can get rid of private property. You can control people's movements. It is fundamentally the abolition of civilization as we know it. For what? The science is not solid. The science is debated. They look at science as if it is religious, irrefutable dogma. Nobel Prize scientist recently has come out and he said that there is no real climate crisis. That's right. This is a debated fact. Is there a climate crisis or not? Scientist John Clauser, who won a Nobel Prize in physics last year, had been scheduled to give a speech at a climate seminar hosted by the International Monetary Fund. John Clauser has come out and he said the climate crisis is a hoax. He's now been canceled. This guy won a Nobel Prize. One of the more telling clips on this topic is the governor of Washington. I'm actually going to Washington a couple weeks from now. Producer Andrew went to the University of Washington. I'm speaking in Yakima. I think I'm speaking in Snohomish. We have a whole Washington tour coming up. Can't wait to see you guys up there. Washington has been rated. I hate these ratings, but I happen to agree that Washington has been rated as the most beautiful state. It's hard to disagree. There's really no ugly places of Washington unless you drive down to Pullman. Spokane to Pullman is not the most beautiful drive in America. It is an objectively beautiful state. Every corner of it, lakes and rivers and valleys, mountains and waterfalls. It's just an incredible place. And so Jay Inslee is kind of the Archbishop of Earth Worship, otherwise known as the Governor of Washington. Listen to what he's saying. He's saying we're inventing a new economy. This is a central planner's dream. He's going to call the shots. We're going to say what is permissible activity. When you secularize society, it doesn't stay godless. You replace it with pseudo-fabricated religions. So as America becomes less Christian, as America becomes less Judeo-Christian in our value system, we just go back to earth worship, the very thing the Bible was written to refute. Play cut five.
It's very exciting what's going on right now in inventing a new economy. And we're doing that right in Washington State, and people are getting great jobs because of this. So there's two parts to this story. This thing is now the age of consequences. The bomb has gone off. But we do have the ability to restrain fossil fuels if we make the commitments we need to.
Inventing. That's a new word. I have not heard a politician use the word invent. It reminds me of create. Invent and create are very similar. He looks at himself as a godlike figure that he gets to make new out of nothing. Ex nihilo. This is creeping up on us, and from the built-in assumption, the built-in premise of the climate hoax is carbon is bad. Okay, well, carbon is life, actually. You can't have anything without carbon at all, literally. Life is built on carbon. So they say, well, carbon dioxide is bad. Well, how much carbon dioxide is bad? Don't plants thrive on carbon dioxide? The earth is greener than any other time it has been in the history of the world. What is causing rising global temperatures? These people are arrogant enough to believe, but they actually know it at their core. They know it's not a climate crisis. They see it as an excuse to justify a totalitarian administrative state power grab over our freedom and liberty. COVID was a temporary thing. We pushed back against it. Mass migration is part of it as well. But the one that is sneaking up on us, everybody, is earth worship, environmentalism. We have to be prepared in more than one way to refute it, to debate it, and not bend the knee at the green calf. It's not going to be the golden calf. It will be the green calf that comes forward in this generation and makes us forsake our traditions, our customs, our liberties, and our freedoms. You've been warned. It's coming. And it's coming to abolish civilization as we know it. I want to tell you about Buy Optimizers. If you listen to my podcast, you hear me talk about these digestive enzymes. I take digestive enzymes almost every meal. They're a game changer. Masszymes are 100% plant-based, naturally derived enzymes that digest proteins, starches, sugars, fibers, and fats. For those of you that never tried Masszymes, it is your chance, so listen up. This month, only get your free bottle of best-selling 100% plant-based, naturally derived digestive enzymes. Bioptimizers, the maker of Masszymes, are offering a challenge. For my listeners, they're offering a free bottle of Masszymes. All you have to do is pay a normal shipping fee. That is it. No other strings attached, no purchase required. Their challenge is simple. Try Masszymes and see all the positive changes of enhanced digestion and nutrient absorption. If your digestion issues, gas, bloating, and fatigue after meals are not gone after you take a full bottle, you've lost nothing. But if they are, your life is back on track. To get your bottle, just go to masszymes.com/kirkfree and enter coupon code KIRK10. That is it. Listen, they wouldn't be letting me give these bottles away to you if they weren't 100% confident in how effective it is. And again, this is now on the short list of supplements I absolutely have to have every day. To get your bottle of Masszymes right now, start the challenge. Go to masszymes.com/kirkfree and use coupon code KIRK10. Do not miss the opportunity. It's a limited time offer this month only. Go to masszymes.com/kirkfree. Very important book. So it's called Untenable, The True Story of White Ethnic Flight from America's Cities by Jack Cashel. So there is a narrative that stems from academia that the traditional explanation of quote-unquote white ethnic flight was just simply and solely because of racism. Jack has a different view And when he gets on, I'm going to read an excerpt up here and it will segue perfectly into our segment. But the sloppiness that goes into people's analysis of everything can be blamed on racism, very, very harmful. Thomas Sowell dedicated his best book, which is Discrimination and Disparities, on this idea that if there is a disparity, racism is not necessarily to blame. In fact, it's probably not to blame. If you're able to ever introduce other explanations for disparities, the regime becomes less powerful. Look at the Jason Aldean thing. Jason Aldean is out there playing country music and they say he must be a racist. Now they only throw out the frisbee of racism if it's helpful for them. They don't do that when they obviously act in bigoted and terrible ways. And so now we have Jack Cashel, which is great. Jack, welcome to the program. Thank you. I'm going to read this part of your book. I think it's a great segue. I asked one lifelong friend, a rare Democrat among the displaced, why he and his widowed mother finally left our block in the early 1970s, 20 years after the first black family moved in. He searched a minute for the right set of words, and he simply said, quote, "It became untenable." When I asked what he meant by untenable, he answered, "When your mother gets mugged for the second time, that's untenable. When your home gets broken into the second time, that's untenable." In researching this project, I found myself repeatedly stunned by the failure of self-described experts on white flight to ask those accused of fleeing why they had fled. The reason the experts didn't ask, I discovered, is because they were afraid of what they might learn. What did you learn, and what were people afraid of learning, Jack Cashel?
Learning, Charlie, and that's an excellent quote to begin with, because that my friend's story times a million is a story of white flight. And, there was an op-ed in the New York Times just a few years ago that I found actually kind of amusing. This woman named Zalia Bustan, professor at Princeton, award-winning author of a book on white flight. She imagines herself like a Democratic strategist right after Trump's victory in 2016, saying, what caused it? Was it economic insecurity or was it just pure racism? And so she concludes it's a mixture of the both. And then she ends her article by saying, the odd thing is that none of these people left accounts and they probably don't even know why they left, right? I just interviewed 50 people who knew exactly why they left. And they were prepared to tell her. Mm-hmm. And, as a friend, go into the comment section of the New York Times, distrusting New York Times readers. But one after another of the commenters gave these harrowing, hair-raising stories about why they were forced to leave neighborhoods they loved. And they said, how can you possibly write an article about white flight without mentioning crime or schools? And that really cut to the heart of it, because the people who are setting the narrative have never talked to the people who were the victims of their narrative.
Why do you think that is?
I think because there's a deep case of 60s denialism going on. There's several phenomena that happened in more or less in the 60s that they're responsible for. One of which was these variety of social programs that made it impractical to have a married husband in the house. Mm-hmm. The other was the moral loosening in the culture that made it acceptable to not have a married husband in the house, but to have children outside of marriage. And the combination of the two, Charlie, led to a collapse of the black family. Yes. And with it, a crumbling of inner city black culture that no one wants to talk about.
So the consensus of academia, I go to a college campus and they'll say one of the reasons why black America struggles is because of quote unquote white flight, this amount of people that left. Let's just take my home city of Chicago, right? Certain cities that used to be white working class. I think of Cicero, I think of, where the book The Jungle was written, right? Kind of south, it was very Polish, very Czechoslovakian, very Bohemian, and very Irish, and it's not very much that way anymore. The only acceptable explanation when you mention this is because the Czechoslovakians and the Poles were racist. What you're saying, right, though, is that, well, no, it's actually because their homes and their communities, their local churches and the places they loved became unrecognizable. Build that out.
Right, sure. And I'll give you a couple of Chicago examples because I talk about them in the book. One is Michelle Obama. You know, her family, her father is a ward healer, a precinct captain for the Daily Machine. And they're living pretty comfortably in a enclave called Parkway Gardens, which was a co-op, you know, a very high-end black co-op. Their neighborhood collapses around them. So Michelle's mother, Marion Robinson, is a good, responsible parent, refuses to send Michelle and her brother Craig to the neighborhood public school, even though it's brand new. And they send them to a neighborhood in South Shore, which, as you probably know, which at that time was still, had been Jewish and it was transitioning.
No, that's right.
But the schools, and it was a Class C misdemeanor to do what Marion Robinson did, which was to drive her children 15 minutes away from their neighborhood to go to put them in a school that wasn't in their neighborhood.
They went to Whitney then Young. They moved. Yeah, I think she went to Whitney Young High School, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
For high school, right.
Yeah.
And what they did with Brother Craig, because there's an all-black high school down the street, but for Craig, Marion took a second job to send him to a Catholic school, even though they weren't Catholic. So everyone was affected by the collapse of the culture, the inner city culture, blacks, whites, Asians, Hispanics.
Yeah.
It's only the whites were singled out for shame.
Well, that's right. So talk also about and again, I'm just going to keep going back to Chicago. I think Chicago, I mean, Detroit's a good example, but Chicago is one I know really well. So you have these 1960 programs where crime exploded, illegitimacy exploded, you had moral chaos explosion. And, you know, we kind of memory hold how catastrophic the 1960s were from a public policy standpoint. One of the things that also happened, though, was Caprini Green and this idea of public projects and vertical housing and almost forced assimilation, which, I mean, if anyone knows where Caprini Green is, it wasn't near Comiskey. Caprini Green was on the north side in the most unusual place. Talk about kind of central planners that went nuts with this idea of forced assimilation and the consequences of that.
And, you know, it's an interesting question, Charlie, because we're going through that again now.
Yes, we are.
Do it again. You're right. Cabrini Green is a, you know, desirable neighborhood. In fact, oddly, Michelle Obama was part of the team that tore it down and displaced all those people who lived. But, they had this idea. And half, you know what happens in my native Newark, I saw it up close in Chicago as well. The dreamers meet the schemers, right? So the dreamers think, oh, we have nice new buildings. We can change people's lives. The schemers are saying, huh, I got a demolition company that can make some bucks off
this. Exactly.
And
right.
The construction company can build them up. So they build these high rises. Here's the thing that they won't acknowledge is that initially they worked. For the first few years, they worked as long as the families in those buildings were intact nuclear families. And I found this one book that was very useful for me. It was an unpublished book by a guy named George Langston Cook, who grew up in Columbus Homes, which is Newark, New Jersey's most notorious project. For the first few years he was there, he said it was heaven. You know, because it was all nuclear families, blah, blah, blah. Everyone got along. Milkmen came to the door, made house calls, you know. The buildings were, everything was beautiful. It worked. Maintenance was spectacular. And then he says, and he's a black guy, and he's, you know, from family of six. And he's saying, then the welfare families started coming into these buildings. So it wasn't so much the buildings as it was the families. And then the concentration of those families.
No, that's cloistering. That's exactly right. Yes.
And they want to do that now, which is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, we don't need to go too far down that rabbit hole, but Caprini Green was so interesting. It was home to 15,000 people, and it was in this desirable neighborhood right near Streeterville. And it stuck out like a sore thumb. I remember growing up, Caprini Green was still in somewhat of existence. It was demolished, I think, in 2010, 2011, but you did not get near it. You did not get within two blocks of it. And it was the center of all this gang activity. It was cloistered, like, black gang activity in what otherwise was a super, super nice neighborhood. So we have about a minute remaining. Why does it matter to tell the story accurately on white flight? What is isn't this just kind of a silly coffee table academic exercise? Why does it matter to tell the truth about this? What are the consequences of this?
Well, you know, just as you suggested, Charlie, the consequences are that we're repeating our mistakes. And we think we can change human nature by, you know, with a magic wand, and we cannot. And but I wanted to write this book to vindicate those millions of people from Newark to Chicago to Detroit to Milwaukee,
that's right.
You know, across the country. They need to be able to explain it to their children as to why they are where they are and how they got there.
No, that's so smart.
And that's my,
No, I don't mean to interrupt.
That's my
report. No, so I mean,
no.
I, on my mom's side, my great grandmother grew up in a Polish working class family in a neighborhood now where if you got near it, you get shot. Like you have a better chance to get shot than anything else. It's about 20 blocks south of Comiskey Park, right near 47th Street or 51st Street, one of the most dangerous neighborhoods in Chicago. And then on my wife's side, her family grew up in Chicago, right near Midway Airport, which is still a little bit working class, but it's largely been. And there is this kind of sort of Damocles where you send your kids off to college and they believe that now they go back and tell their grandparents you were racist. It's actually,
that's right.
It is vindicating your ancestors is what you're doing. I think that's really smart and it's so important. Hey, Charlie Kirk here. If you guys love this program and you want to support this program, if we have impacted or blessed your life in any way, I'm going to tell you about a new thing that we are starting it up. First of all, if you have supported us at charliekirk.com/support, nothing to worry about. You guys are going to be moved on over. If you want to support us even more and say, hey, I want exclusive content, I want to talk to Charlie directly, we are standing up this amazing infrastructure. Team's been working so hard at members.charliekirk.com. Not only is it a way to support us directly outside of all of the other channels, but get this, live Q&As with me and the team, articles exclusively written by me that you won't find anywhere else, pre-show prep calls, and more. Sign up today at members.charliekirk.com. We love bringing our show every day, and we can't wait to bring you even more content that is just for you at the Charlie Kirk exclusive. That's members.charliekirk.com. Head to members.charliekirk.com today. Yes, there's going to be a lot of goodies, a lot of engagement, a lot of fun stuff. But even more than that, if you feel moved and compelled that our show is impacting you and impacting the world, it would mean a lot if you became a member at members.charliekirk.com. The book, super interesting, and I mean, Untenable, the true story of white ethnic flight from America's cities. Yeah, I mean, my grandparents and my great-grandparents moved out of Chicago because of crime. That's how it was always taught to us. But professors say, oh, it's because they were racist. Yeah, they didn't want to get murdered. So Jack Cashel is with us. So Jack, in your historical estimation, why is it that blacks have such high, why are the single motherhood rates so great in the black community?
You know, they were somewhat vulnerable as the last immigrant group to come to America, to come to the cities, I should say. The Italians, the Poles, the Irish had gotten there in the early part of the 20th century. Then they cut off immigration in 1924 from the south and east of Europe. But the black great migration continues into the cities. And when they start arriving in the cities, the kind of the ethos is changing away from becoming a nation where people are held responsible for their own behavior to one where the social workers, et cetera, are rushing in saying, you're not at fault. It's the system's fault. We can help you. We'll give you food stamps. We'll give you welfare. We'll give you reduced rents. And we'll give you and Medicaid. The only catch is you can't have a married man in the household. And it was their late arrival into the cities that made them as vulnerable as they were.
And so,
it was unfortunate.
Yeah, so the tailored policy programs by Lyndon Baines Johnson and others were subsidizing single motherhood. Is that a fair way to say it?
That's absolutely right. And it was happening at the same time Hollywood was saying, oh, it's okay to be a single mother. And, you know, we'd see some movie star with a child and it was all hunky-dory. But the net result was, and, you know, it's curious. So I've spent a lot of time in Ireland. I'm seeing that they're among their native white populations. You know, they introduce welfare and the culture breaks down. So when some American was a tourist was nearly killed there the other day. And it was native kids, you know, from fatherless homes. And it's a sure recipe. You know, we had one moment, though, Charlie, where we could have turned the tide. And that came in 2008, Barack Obama. He's running for president. I don't know if you remember this, but he was in Chicago at the Apostolic Church of God outside. And he gives this brilliant Father's Day address. And he's a good father. He sets a good role model. And he says to them, he says, if we're to be honest with ourselves, we have to admit that the real problem in our community is the absence of fathers in the household. Too many boys, too many men are acting like boys and abandoning their responsibilities. And then he goes through the litany of crises that occur when fatherlessness is omnipresent. 10 times more likely to end up in prison, you know, 12 times more likely to commit crime, 20 times more likely to end up in poverty, et cetera, down the whole list. It was an excellent speech, the kind of speech he should have been giving. He was a candidate then in 2008, Father's Day. Hillary's out of the race. He's moving to the center. Then Jesse Jackson gets picked up on a hot mic 2 weeks later at a Fox News studio, as though Jesse didn't know he was going to be picked up. And there he was. And I will spare your audience exactly what he said, but it was brutal. And it came with a cutting motion. And Barack Obama never said anything about fatherlessness in any serious way again.
I may just cut it off. So, I mean, without getting too deep into the motivations, about a minute remaining, why is it that the Democrat Party is at odds with fathers? I mean, is it as Machiavellian as if fathers go back into the homes and they're publicly advocated, the tyrants become less powerful?
Well, the black single females is the single greatest cohort, the most dependable cohort in the party. And they're married to the government now, and they know it. And if that government turns on them and the Democratic Party turns on them, they'll have to rethink everything. Look what they did to Robert Kennedy the other day. They can't. Their best card is the race card, and they'll pull it even on their own.
That's right. And we're going to have you back on, Jack, because you talk about topics that it seems like you don't care when people call you the R word. I tell you, the super weapon that we have against these toxic Marxist movement is just not care when they call you a racist. Just don't care, and all of a sudden they become significantly less powerful. Final thoughts, Jack Cashel.
You are absolutely right about that. I participated in I live in Kansas City, in a debate on reparations, televised debate. They couldn't find a second person to be on my side. They had to look far and wide. And I said, sure, bring it on. I'll take it on. You know?
Yeah, in Kansas. Yeah, I mean, by the way, I'll join you at any time. That would be really fun. What's hilarious is that 80% of Kansas agrees with you. They can't find a single person because they don't want to be called a racist. Jack Cashel, we're going to have you back on. You're great. Thank you. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
Cable news, noisy, boring, out of touch. That's why Salem News Channel is different. We keep you in the know. Streaming 24/7 for free. Home to the greatest collection of conservative voices like Dennis Prager, Jay Sekulow, Mike Gallagher, and more. Salem News Channel is unfiltered and unapologetic. Watch anytime, on any screen, at snc.tv and local now, channel 525.